Hey everyone, we just wanted to take a moment and thank a couple of people without whom these podcasts would not be possible. To start, the Pleasure Chest. If you guys have never been to the Pleasure Chest, you must check them out. We think this erotic boutique is extremely special because they have such an emphasis on education and inclusivity. You can go to thepleasurechest.com. If you live in New York, LA, or Chicago, definitely stop into one of their shops. They even have free sex ed in all of those locations. Thepleasurechest.com. They're awesome. Check it out. We also want to shout out Alisa Vici of flowliving.com. Guys, if you have any questions about how your cycle works, have issues with your period, she's your girl. Flowliving.com, that's F-L-O, no W. She also has a brand new app called My Flow App. We've learned so much from her, we can't recommend it enough. You can find her new app at myflowtracker.com or look for the My Flow App in the iTunes store. And lastly, we just want to give a little disclaimer. None of the opinions expressed in any of these podcasts are representative of Cycles and Sex as an organization. Some of the speakers may use the words girl, lady, woman, man. As an organization, Cycles and Sex recognizes that gender is distinct from genitals. We are really striving to use as much inclusive language as we can, and we apologize for when that doesn't come across. We really value all genders and agenders and really hope to bring everyone into these conversations. All right, here we go, and we hope to see you at one of our next live events.
The next panel is on fertility. Is anyone interested? It's on fertility from both sides. We have Jill Blakeway, an acupuncturist and Chinese medicine specialist. She's the founder of the Yanova Center. They have a table downstairs. You can learn all about it. And we also have Dr. Joseph Davis, who's an OBGYN, also a doctor of gynecology, endocrinology, infertility. He specializes in providing medical and surgical treatment for infertility. It's my pleasure to welcome you both.
Hi, you guys. I feel like I should start singing, or Dr. Davis and I should entertain you, which we hope to do. I'm Jill Blakeway. As they said, I'm the founder, and I continue to run the Yanova Center. We are down in Union Square. We're one of the biggest acupuncture practices in the country, and we treat everybody from teeny tiny babies to elderly people with arthritis. But our major focus is reproductive medicine. And back in 2009, I wrote a book called Making Babies with a doctor, like Dr. Davis, because I wanted to give people the best of all worlds when it came to fertility medicine. And then I wrote a book called Sex Again, so I'm kind of perfect for this event in some ways, Cycles and Sex. And now I'm writing a book about energy medicine. And this is my colleague, Dr. Joe Davis, and he is a useful man to know about because he is a DO, he's a doctor of osteopathy, but he's also a reproductive endocrinologist and an OBGYN. So he is a triple threat, and he works at RMA of New York downtown, Dr. Davis.
Yeah, well, thanks everybody for coming. And this is, it's my pleasure to work with Jill, of course, to give this really exciting talk. And, you know, a little bit about our RMA is we're a large practice as well. You know, we have six offices throughout the New York area, and I'm mostly in the Soho office downtown. And just as she said, you know, I'm an osteopathic physician, so one of the things that I've really tried to push through in the RMA network and in my own practice is really this holistic approach to care, to really incorporating wellness and health and nutrition and acupuncture and everything. And so we're really going to try to give you some idea about that when it comes to the menstrual cycle today.
We're going to combine our brains.
Yes.
So I was thinking about this as I came in today. Several years ago now, New York Magazine were going to write an article on the anniversary of the pill. And they rang me for a quote, which happens if you write books, journalists ring you for a quote. And the journalist said, "Do you think the pill is making women infertile?" Which is quite the question. And of course, I think what she wanted was for me to say yes, because it's a better story, isn't it? But I don't believe that at all. I don't believe that for a minute. But I do, and I wonder if this is your experience too, I do often have women in their mid-30s come into my office because they've stopped taking the pill because they want to start a family. And they find that their cycles are completely completely awry. There are lots of people nodding, actually. And so what I ended up saying to New York Magazine was, no, the pill isn't making women infertile. Let's not all freak out here. But if you had irregular cycles in your early 20s or your late teens and you went on the pill, you have probably forgotten that you had irregular cycles. And when you come off the pill, you need to troubleshoot that. Is that your experience?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that frequently we see people that are coming in that have those questions is, you know, we have a sort of a questionnaire that people fill out just about some of their experience and their history. And one of the questions is, how frequent are your menstrual cycles? And I will always see it as, oh, 28 days on the dot. And then when talking about it, they say, well, yeah, when I stop the pill, I get my period, and then I start it up again. And I say, oh, okay, well, think back to before that. And they say, well, yeah, it was every 2 to 3 months. And, you know, it's really important to know that, you know, that impact of it. But it does. It's the cycles are variable, and they're fluid, and they do change.
And so we thought it would be a good place to start for me to ask you, what is a regular cycle? And before I do that, I have to say that from a Chinese medicine perspective, a regular cycle really should go with the lunar cycle. And we were designed to do that. And so back in the days before there was any kind of artificial light, our brains noticed the passage of time by the change of light at night. And so you are designed to ovulate during the full moon, which makes sense, doesn't it? Because when there was no artificial light, that was when you could see your partner and presumably find them attractive and things like that. It's sort of, nature is smart, people. And then you're designed to have your period during the new moon, which is the darkest time of the cycle. And your cycle is supposed to be 28 days, which is, coincidentally, a lunar cycle.
Exactly.
However, much less poetically, what's what's really going on?
So, yeah, and that's, I mean, it's amazing how these things are. I mean, obviously, this is nature, and things have this fluid sort of interaction. But the sort of clinical answer to that is that a typical menstrual cycle is somewhere between 25 to 35 days, which is interesting because the average of that would be 30, not 28, but yet 28 is also sort of the other sort of average that we talk about. But the cycle itself is a cycle. It's broken down into these, you know, different components of the cycle. And really, there's sort of several different ways to look at that. But the first part of the cycle, when we consider heavy flow, day one of heavy bleeding is sort of the hormonal start of your cycle, this is really the beginning of the egg growing phase. So at the beginning of that, hormonally, you're starting your period. The eggs are sort of aligning, getting ready to grow. Ovulation is sort of the dividing line between the egg growing phase and the second part of the cycle, or the other big part of the cycle, which is really sort of the progesterone dominant early pregnancy phase. And we call this the luteal phase, we call the egg cycle the follicular phase, but it's really important to look at the two of those, especially when you're talking about fertility, because a lot of fertility focuses on the egg growing phase. And a lot of variability in people's cycles is related to the egg growing phase. So someone who has a 28-day cycle on the dot, they ovulate around day 14 and then get their period 2 weeks later. Someone who has a, you know, 64-day cycle is going to ovulate around day 50-ish and then get their period 2 weeks later. So ovulation's the moving target because the time it takes the egg to grow varies so much.
And you can track your cycle. We don't have time to go into BBTs in any great length. And I would recommend a book by Tony Wechsler called Taking Charge of Your Fertility, incidentally, you guys, which is an awesome book on how to understand your cycle. But at the Unova Center, we have everybody doing BBTs. And you can see that for your follicular phase, your egg-growing phase, your temperature's a little lower. And then there's usually a dip, which is when your LH surges, which triggers ovulation. And then your temperature is higher. And from an acupuncturist point of view, we can start to troubleshoot your cycle when we see those BBT charts. So for instance, if your temperature goes up after you've ovulated but it sags back down, we have herbs. That's really your progesterone going down a little bit, and we have herbs to help you maintain those levels. And that's a lot of what we do. And I have to say that women, when they lose rhythm, feel peculiar. And there are lots of temptations to lose your rhythm now. There are birth control methods that take you out of your rhythm. And I remember, not you, because you are a very lovely fertility doctor, but there was a fertility doctor in town who was giving people two ovulation phases through their cycle so that they could get more eggs. So he was, you can see where the... someone like Dr. Davis does this for someone who's having cancer treatment. If they're in a huge rush and we need to harvest eggs and freeze them before chemotherapy, it's perfectly possible to get someone to ovulate twice in a cycle. And this was being done for people who weren't in that same crisis rush. And I think I was one of the people who noticed it because the patients weren't reporting to their doctor that they felt weird, but they felt weird. And they were coming in and they were talking about insomnia and irritability and PMS type symptoms and breast tenderness and bloating and fatigue. And I would say that that's because they'd lost their rhythm, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's an important thing too, is that, you know, knowing what's going on with your cycle and understanding where you are in your cycle, you can follow your symptoms and you can really kind of get, there's a lot of sort of non-medical, very natural ways to know where you are in your cycle. And one of those, for women that are trying to, if they're attempting pregnancy and are really trying to time things, is cervical mucus analysis. And it's because that follicular phase, that egg growing phase, your estrogen level rises, and that causes changes in the consistency of your cervix, the fluid in your cervix, really so that, you know, sperm can get to the egg, to fertilize the egg. And so it's sort of this amazing, you know, elegant balance between the way the brain hormones are talking to the ovaries, and the ovaries are making estrogen, and that changes the cycle. It's really an unbelievable sort of dance, if you will.
We're beautifully designed,
yes.
Basically. We are beautifully designed. I think men are beautifully designed, too. I don't mean to cut you out of this conversation, but we're amazing. We're like,
absolutely.
Amazing. We produce that cervical mucus, which is the same pH as semen, just at the point where we're ovulating. I mean, how awesome is that, that we have that kind of innate wisdom? And that's why we have to keep encouraging our body's rhythms, I think. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the things that throw people off rhythm, because that, I think, is a good question, isn't it? Why do I lose my rhythm? And there are some very basic things. The first is actually weight, isn't
yes.
it? 12% of infertility cases are caused by some kind of weight issue, either overweight or underweight, and they are equally distributed. That's it?
Absolutely, yeah. And an important aspect of that is that a lot of people don't think about it, but fat cells are hormone-secreting cells. So the more or the less fat that you have, the more or less hormone that's being produced. And the brain sees this. And the brain, again, is very sensitive to saying, look, you know, reproduction should happen in the situation of most health. You know, you want to be as healthy as you can to grow a baby, to have a baby, to be able to breastfeed the baby. And if something's off on that spectrum, you know, either too much nutrient, too little nutrient, then that's going to throw off the system. And it does it via a hormone connection between the fat cells and the brain. And then therefore, they regulate the release of hormones to grow the eggs. And so definitely, that's one of the biggest things, because, you know, weight fluctuations, being underweight, being overweight, or being normal weight, all of us are affected in some way by one of those situations.
But the good news is you don't have to be supermodel skinny.
Correct.
I have never been supermodel skinny, or even just ordinary skinny. So you don't have to, you know, there's a very broad variation of weight. But sometimes if your periods are awry, you can drop just like 3 or 4 pounds. It always amazes me how little it takes for you to drop back into balance. The biggest issue we see, though, is the other side of that, isn't
Correct.
It? We see people who overexercise and undereat and are under-resourced.
Yep.
And they have often what we would call hypothalamic amenorrhea, yeah?
Yep, absolutely. And it's really, again, sort of a stress-like situation, is that high levels of stress, high stress hormones, be that from a you know, over-exercise sort of standpoint, the body's being worked to its limit, it's really, you know, pumping out a lot of these stress-related hormones to keep up with the fitness level or the exercise level, that actually tells the brain, look, this isn't the best time to be growing a baby right now. I'm going to stop ovulation. I'm going to space out my period so that I don't have to worry about being under-resourced for the actual pregnancy.
So the first thing I would troubleshoot is weight. And if you are not getting your period, the first question I would ask is, are you well-resourced? Are you underweight? Are you over-exercising? And again, it's often fairly subtle. So you only have to you don't have to put on a ton of weight. You just maybe have to put on 3 or 4 pounds. I have many women who carry almonds with them in their pocket because nuts are a good way of doing it. It doesn't mean you have to hit the Haagen-Dazs or something, although, as far as I'm concerned, you can. It's just that a little bit more fat is a good idea.
And a lot of it, too, is many of us don't realize, you know, because obviously eating every day is something that all of us like to do. It's important for life to eat every day. So a lot of us don't realize how much our diet is affecting it, as well as our exercise level. And frequently we see that it's just an energy imbalance, that we're exercising because it makes us feel good, we get the endorphins, and you know, maybe we're not particularly hungry, or we eat something quick and easy and the calorie count just doesn't quite add up, or the nutrients. And so it's a balance, or it's an imbalance rather, of nutrition. And so that's another thing to draw attention to it and say, hey, you know, where are you on this? And you know, I know we have a nutritionalist in our office that's great about sort of just looking at your overall nutrition status and saying, hey, where are you, you know, what are you taking in, what are you putting out, and where can we find this balance? So absolutely, you don't have to pound down a whole bunch of high-calorie foods and gain a lot of weight. Likewise, you don't have to completely stop exercising in order to, you know, get the balance back, but it's important to find that balance.
And of course, if you understand your rhythm, you're better at finding that balance, because you can feel it. You can feel when you get into balance. And it brings us neatly to diet. And people always ask me, what is the fertility diet?
Right.
And there is, of course, no real fertility diet, although I wrote one for my book, Making Babies, because, you know, in a book, you write a diet, but the truth, now it's just us, is that really you need to eat lots of colorful fruits and veggies, some healthy oils. It's hard to get fat-free dieters pregnant. You do need oils as precursors to hormones. It's hard to get Atkins dieters pregnant. You do need some carbohydrates in order to make hormones, don't you?
Absolutely. And I would say that probably is the point of most frustration by my patients to me, is when they ask that question, is what is the ideal diet? And I say, well, you know, you should try to eat healthy, eat balanced, eat organic, make your food at home, don't order out. And people are like, okay, you know, that's like the antithesis of New York life. I mean, you know, we order out, we get it delivered, but it's true. It's so simple that it's hard to do, you know?
Yes. And yet, you know, once you focus, it's really often the people do quite well on the paleo diet in some ways.
True. Yep.
Is that a 10-minute to-go call? Okay. And then things like sleep. There was some really interesting research that looked at people who had sleep-deprived jobs, flight attendants, shift workers who changed their shift, and they had almost double the cases of irregular menses of everybody else, which must mean that rhythm is important, including good sleep hygiene. And then what else throws people off? Weight, exercise, sleep. Some medications.
Yeah.
Stress is a huge issue.
Definitely.
I can see it on people's BBT charts, actually. I can see them waiting to ovulate until the stress is over,
right.
And they almost ovulate, and then they don't. And I can often pinpoint what was happening last Thursday, and they're like, oh, my God, I had this huge row with my boss. It was horrible. And, you know, I always tell the patients that we are evolutionarily primed to have less children during war and famine, and that here in New York particularly, we fake war and famine really, really well. And so we, you know, it doesn't make us infertile, but it does make us subfertile, because our body's waiting for a better month, I think.
Absolutely. And I think that the other part of it too, and you know, seeing a lot of people who are struggling with fertility, that struggle adds its own element of stress and can be even so significant that it makes people's cycles become irregular. I've had this many a time where someone says, oh, I was having my period regularly, I started monitoring, we were trying, and all of a sudden my cycles started getting more irregular and I don't know what's going on. And it's the stress of thinking about it and focusing on it and trying to overcome it that actually makes the problem worse.
Yes, I always tell people, you don't get stressed about being stressed. Stressed people get pregnant. They do. Otherwise, literally no one in New York would ever reproduce, would they?
Right.
Truthfully, all my patients are stressed. So let's talk about what we do to regulate our cycles, yeah? And I want to start, obviously, food. We've touched on it. A good, healthy, balanced, broad diet, healthy fats. Don't disinclude anything. I think a Whole30 is often a good place to start. A paleo Whole30 is a good place to start. And then I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the most tiny of interventions, which is seed cycling. I don't know whether any of you have heard of seed cycling, but it always feels very improbable that something tiny will work. But hormones are actually in very fine balance, and sometimes something very small makes just that tiny little bit of difference. And sometimes if you take a sledgehammer to this, you can actually make it worse. So here's how you seed cycle. What you do is you take pumpkin and flax seeds, 1 tablespoon of ground pumpkin, 1 tablespoon of ground flax seed, and you throw it in your smoothie in the morning or over your oatmeal or something like that. Grind them fresh because they do get rancid. And you take those for what we we're calling the follicular phase, yes, from your period until ovulation. And you swap at that point, and you take 1 tablespoon of sesame seeds and 1 tablespoon of sunflower seeds ground up, and you take that every day for what's called your luteal phase after ovulation. And the idea is that the follicular phase seeds, the pumpkin seed and the flax seed, have high lignans in them, and they help with estrogen metabolism, just slightly. And the sunflower seeds in the luteal phase, along with the sesame seeds, have precursors to making progesterone. So I would, if you have plenty of time, if you're not in a fertility crisis and you're just trying to troubleshoot an irregular cycle, I would start there.
Absolutely. And I think that that's an important thing to keep in mind, too, is that those subtle treatments, those improvements of the hormones, essentially, of the different parts of the cycle, they may work in and of themselves, but they also may be adjuncts to some of the other things that we can do. And as far as like medical treatments for irregular cycles, well, a very common one, of course, and you've had wonderful talks about this today, is the birth control pill, which is very good at regulating cycles. It's not very good at helping with fertility, though, because it's sort of the antithesis of fertility. So a lot of the treatments that we have on the medical side when it comes to irregular cycles is trying to boost the body's ability to kickstart that egg-growing phase. And a lot of these are either pills that help the brain sort of think that there's not enough estrogen around, so it boosts up the growth of the eggs, makes the estrogen level rise, or even just the direct hormones that the brain makes, this follicle stimulating hormone or FSH, to tell the ovary to work a little bit more efficiently. And they're all sort of individualized to your situation, to what's going on, so it's not just a one size fits all. But there are benefits of that, and I think it's additive to all of the more sort of subtle things that Jill's talking about.
And in making babies, and I don't mean to plug my own book, but we did try and help people work out when they needed that kind of treatment. So I think people should start with something relatively gentle. Chinese medicine has been treating all sorts of menstrual irregularities for literally thousands of years. So Chinese herbs are really very powerful. They're different to Western herbs, because in Western herbology, you take one herb for one thing, you know, St. John's wort for depression kind of thing. In Chinese medicine, we practice polypharmacy, which means that we look at all of you and we create a herbal formula for you. And it probably has 14 or 15 herbs in, and then we change them. And what we tend to do is change them through the cycle. So we'll give you different herbs during your period, different herbs during the rest of the egg-growing phase, different herbs at ovulation, different herbs in your luteal phase, and we'll help you troubleshoot it. But if you can't do that, if that isn't working, there is a time to move on. And I send people to Dr. Davis for fertility testing fairly early. You know, there are some things that we should know about. Like, I would hate to treat a patient for months on end and then find she had blocked tubes. I would feel very horrible about that. Like I had failed in my job to make sure that she didn't have blocked tubes and we were just messing about here.
Well, and absolutely, and that's another thing to bear in mind is that, you know, some people sort of see going to a fertility physician or fertility specialist is sort of like, oh, I'm having fertility problems, I'm going to see this person, they're going to just totally put me on medicine, it's all going to be westernized from that point forward. That's not my approach. My approach is to say, look, that visit, that talk is about, let's try to find out what's going on hormonally, let's see where things are going, you know, right or wrong, and just sort of see where things are. And the answer may be, hey, just keep trying. Or the answer may be, just keep doing the seeding, because that's really, that subtle thing is what you need. But definitely it's easier to know ahead of time if there's some other major event going on. And part of that is like I said, there's hormones from the brain that tell the ovary to grow eggs. Some people have too much of that, some people have too little of that, and some people, the numbers look just right, but their cycles are still very irregular, a situation called polycystic ovary syndrome. And knowing where you are sort of within that level, those levels of those hormones, can really help you to know what's going to be maybe the best next step, or what's going to be something that may not even work, and you know, what kind of time frame are you looking at for when you might want to take another step.
And there is lots of help out there. If you get to the point where you need help, we take it for granted because we think about this every single day, but you probably aren't necessarily paying attention. But fertility medicine has come on enormously. I've practiced this for, I guess, 18 years now, and in that time, it's changed so much. So IVF has changed so much in that time, and success rates have gone up hugely.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, is in vitro fertilization irregularization is one element on the spectrum of things. And typically people who are having irregular cycles that are considering fertility are not even thinking about IVF and probably don't even need to be. But it's something to be aware of, is that all of the spectrum, from natural to your cycle as it is without any intervention, all the way up to IVF, are all doing the same sort of things, just in maybe a little bit more sort of robust ways. And IVF is to say every woman starts out a menstrual cycle with a large group of eggs that have the potential to grow. The body has this nice balance to select one of those eggs to grow to ovulate. Some people it takes a lot longer to get there. Some people it takes 2 weeks to get there, and that's sort of your 28-day cycle. With IVF, we say, well, if that's not working, say we've tried all these things and your cycle's irregular and it's still not working, what if it's something to do with the egg? And if we were to collect up all of those eggs that were going to grow that month, otherwise the ones that didn't grow normally would have just been destroyed and your body would have said, okay, I'm ready for a new batch next month. Well, with IVF, we say, well, let's collect up those eggs and see if we can find the best one of that group to try to get you pregnant. And so, again, it's not as science fiction, I think, as sometimes it's put out in the media, as it's taking a natural sort of process and just trying to help out a little bit more with it.
And I think when we talk about IVF, one of the questions that comes up for people is, particularly younger women, is should I be getting ahead of the game and freezing my eggs? Should I have my 29-year-old eggs in the freezer or something like that? And I think a lot of us who work in fertility actually think you probably should, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The egg freezing technology has come on hugely. Again, in the time I've been doing this, it's come on hugely. And my suggestion would be that you pick a center that has had live births from their egg freezing. Egg freezing has become trendy. But the question to ask is, how long have you been doing this? And do you have live births? Which I can ask you, actually, come to think of it.
Yeah, and I agree. It's an excellent question. And, you know, I mean, I'm fortunate to be a part of RMA, where we have been doing egg freezing for around 11 years now. And we have had quite a few over 100 live births resulting from there's actually been, I think it was 1,200 women that have frozen their eggs, and many women who freeze their eggs don't come back to use them, so that live birth number is always going to be a portion of the total people who utilize the egg freezing. But again, I think part of it is having that conversation with your doctor and saying, hey, you know, I'm just thinking ahead to the future. You know, my cycles are regular, my cycles are not irregular. Let's see where things are. And if I'm not ready to have a baby right now, but I want to know what are my options, and egg freezing is one of those options that's available. And absolutely, the technology has come along leaps and bounds. It started around 12 years ago, pioneered by a woman out of Italy who's a fantastic and amazing woman, and it was out of necessity because of Italian law. But when the U.S. did it, it was all under research, and we were really studying, is this possible? Can we do it safely? For the last few years, it's come off research saying that we've proven that it's successful, or we've proven that it's safe, and so we're seeing more and more people using it every day now, and because it is, it's such a liberating opportunity to say, look, I'm no longer bound to, I have to have a child in my 20s because it'll just get, you know, difficult beyond that. You can say, look, I'm going to freeze my eggs. I don't have to have a child right now. I can come back in 10 years or 15 years and have that baby.
So we've covered a lot of ground here because we had a short time to talk to you. And what we've done, and this is why I like talking with the DO, who's at RE, incidentally, because he indulged me on lunar cycles and seed cycling. And we covered all of that and then egg freezing, hopefully seamlessly. But, you know, our take-home message to you is, even if you're not trying to conceive now, if your cycles are irregular in some way, troubleshoot them now. Troubleshoot them now. You will feel better. It's better for your health. It's often a signal that something else is wrong. So don't ignore it. Don't just take the pill and create a fake cycle. Work out why. And I was wondering, I think we have a couple of minutes to take questions. I think that was 5 minutes to take questions. So do you have questions for us while we're standing here for you? Yes. Oh, you weren't giving me the 5 minute, you were waving. See, my trust, though, in you. I was like, yes, timing person.
I wondered if there is an alternative for a substitute for sunflower seeds for the seed cycling, because I happen to be allergic to that seed.
Oh, that's interesting. I would double the sesame.
Okay.
I would just double the sesame.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good question.
Hi. I was wondering if you could talk about mid-cycle or ovulation pain in the ovary.
Yeah. Everything I read says it's just normal, and if it doesn't last long, and I'm wondering what that has, what your feelings are about, what it says about the hormones and fertility.
Oh, it would be interesting to see if we see this differently, actually. In Chinese medicine, we don't think that's normal. We think you feel that because of stagnation in some way, and we troubleshoot that. It isn't normal to feel your ovulation, and to us, it speaks to a slightly glitchy transition there at ovulation. So we would ask you about that, and we would use that as a measure to see if we were improving and making progress with treatment. But
no, and that's an interesting question, because on the Western side of it, we do frequently, I have lots of people who say they do feel their ovulation, and actually I have sort of two different groups of it. People that say they have horrible pain with ovulation, others that say this is sort of, I'm in charge of my cycle, I can feel my ovulation, I know when to try to get pregnant. I would say I somewhat would concur with Jill on this, in that feeling ovulation, especially pain with ovulation, could be a sign of some sort of, you know, stricture or scar tissue around the ovary that means when you ovulate, the ovary actually, the cyst that, or the follicle that the egg is growing in has to burst. And the egg is released actually into your abdomen, which is amazing, that you release an egg into your abdomen, your tube kind of gathers it up. And so that breaking open of the follicle or that cyst shouldn't cause intense pain. And if it does, it may mean that there's something about where the ovary is positioned that it's pulling on other structures, or it's tightening, which would be scar tissue, which would be along that lines of stagnation, just more of a physical sort of stagnation.
That was my very Chinese medicine-y way of saying the same thing.
No, really, I think it's great.
Another question, yes.
My question is sort of like a comment and a question. You two seem to be like really like serendipitous, like Chinese medicine and Western medicine together. It's amazing. My experience in dealing with other gynecologists or things, if I explain to them, like, oh, I don't want to be in the, I have PCOS, I don't want to be in the pill, you know, I'm into more of these holistic things, I get like a very, like, no, that's not going to work for me, or you need to find another doctor. Like, how do you recommend someone who wants to explore both of these, you know, medicine routes in like a way that works with their doctor? Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, it makes total sense. It's a very good question, actually. I think that's changing. I really do. I believe that doctors and acupuncturists work well together these days, mostly. I mean, certainly here in New York, we work well together.
Yes,
but
absolutely.
In general, you know, I wrote a book with a doctor many years ago now. So I think you may have to shop around for doctors who've kept their knowledge about alternative medicine somewhat current. And anyone who's too dismissive of your choices may not be the right choice for you. I mean, obviously, if you're just going to go along with what they say, that would work great. But if you do have views about how you want to treat yourself, you do need the support of your doctor, I think. And I think most good practitioners get their ego out of the way, because we want you to get pregnant, or we want you to have regular cycles. You know, we all went into medicine because we're mostly, I think, nice people who want to help people, yeah?
Oh boy.
And I used to teach in a hospital, and I used to teach the acupuncture students that the doctors are nice people who went to medical school because they want to help people. People go into caring professions because they care, and then they forget at some point, or their egos get involved or something like that. But I think all good practitioners put their ego to one side, don't you think, and work together.
No, absolutely. And I agree that one thing that, from my perspective at least, is that there is a balance between Western and Eastern medicine, and that one is not perfect for everyone. And I am so grateful to have like Jill and other acupuncturists to work with at Unova, because my approach to that would be is say, look, if you're not interested in being on the birth control pill, from a medical side of things, there's a couple of elements of PCOS that we want to just be aware of. Like, there's slightly increased risk of insulin resistance or diabetes down the road. And if you go a really long time with lots of estrogen around without getting a period, then you can get precancerous changes in the lining of your uterus. So for that reason, you want to have a period at least every 3 months. We can work with that. You know, part of it may be doing acupuncture to try to improve the mechanisms to get the cycles on their own. And if you get to that 3 month mark, maybe take some, you know, progesterone for a few weeks to bring on a period and then start back again. It's an integrative approach, and it's looking at both. So there's definitely options, and I agree. Find a doctor that you feel is listening to your concerns, be it that or be it any other concerns, and just feel someone that you're comfortable working with. It should be really a collaborative team. You know, you and your doctor are on the same page, and if you don't feel like you are, then maybe it's good to get a second opinion.
Next one. Do we have, or are we done? Okay. You know what, though? We're down at the Unova table. Come and find us, and we'll answer your question. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thanks, everyone, for being here.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to check out our resource scenes at cyclesandsex.com so we can continue to support you on your explorations and learnings. Special thanks to JT Norden and Avery Miles for helping us with these podcasts.